Oh my gosh, you guys, Cave of Solitude in the house. You are now listening to your hostess with the mostest, the lady of the house, Lady J. And I also have here the main guy of the town. Stand to state your name is what you say.
Eric Anthony. Happy to be here with you, Lady J, Daphne J, all the other names that you go by. Insane Mercenary, the realest voice in podcasting, as I was told to tell you over the weekend.
No way.
Yes, I was told to let you know that you are the realest voice in podcasting.
What?
Yes.
So, it's been an eventful weekend.
It has been an eventful weekend.
So, a couple of things have happened lately. In which you went places, you saw, and you conquered. Yes?
Daphne J is taking control of the Cave of Solitude, folks, just so you know. This is all her show right now. She's the host this week.
So, first of all, our latest podcast that was posted was based on the villains.
Yes, we got the email from... Martin Slam Duncan.
Requesting to have us give our top 10 villains.
Top 10 villains.
Which, you know what, was not an easy task. Because that realm is, you know, if you, I guess, category, or, what's the word? It starts with a C. It's very fancy. if you... compartmentalize. There's a bunch of different villains in different realms, right?
Right.
You got Disney, then you got comics, then you have movies, then you have video games, and then you got, I don't know...
Wrestling.
There you go, right? So it was a task, but we were up
tough.
To it.
Yeah, it was tough.
We did it. And,
I definitely missed a couple.
You know, in retrospect, you're like, oh, how could I have forgotten that one? But there's so many out there.
There is so many.
So we welcome you guys, the listeners, you know, send in your emails. Let us know what your top 10 villains are. Martin Slam Duncan, however, sent us an email back.
What's up, Martin?
And he shared his top 10 as well.
Is that correct?
This happened for realsies.
Are you going to read it or do you want me to read it?
How about you do it?
Want me to read it? All right.
I'll give you the honors.
Okay. Oh, I got to try to do an impression here. Hello, podcasters. In trying to do a Newman voice, I'm not really good at it. Hello, Jerry. Hello, podcasters. Thanks so much for choosing to do my request for best villains. It was great to listen to. Choosing wrestling and video game villains was inspired. Thanks to Daphne for filling me in on the Hollywood redhead conspiracy. I think she may be onto something. That was a good point.
You know what?
Thank you,
Martin. Slam Duncan. I feel like...
I'm so happy you're getting his name right now.
I should be getting it right by this point.
By this point.
It needs to be good.
He continues, you both had solid lists, many of which I would have chosen. Here are some of my picks that you didn't mention. I stayed away from Disney and comics as there are too many to mention.
Yeah, see, so I think he was kind of on the wavelength of...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we had some Disney, but... Comics, I think we tried to steer away from that.
Yeah.
We should do that another time.
We will. So, here are some of his. I don't think there's 10. He might have a couple more, but that's okay because some of them, I think, just browsing through, I definitely should have put them on my
list. Okay,
so Bruce, the shark from Jaws.
The guy that goes to AA meetings to not eat fish?
No, it's the shark from Jaws.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. From Jaws.
Yeah.
Yes.
The shark from Nemo?
Yeah, because he's
No.
Fish are friends.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
No.
Oh my goodness.
This was the actual shark.
But I totally get it. Okay, next.
Alien from Alien 1.
Yeah.
The Thing from John Carpenter's The Thing. Jack Torrance from The Shining. That's a good one. Walter White from Breaking Bad.
I started watching that.
Okay.
And then I stopped for some reason.
I haven't watched it myself, but they say it's the, like, best television show of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like, I've seen that
so
everywhere.
The Walter, is this... He's a bad guy, obviously.
Yeah.
Is he the main... He's not the main character. We should watch it.
We should watch it before
we
sound like a bunch of dummies. How did you not watch Breaking Bad? Okay, Norman Bates from Psycho. Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Predator.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one with the dreads. In the bushes. Yeah.
Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Joffrey from Game of Thrones. This one I should have picked. Purple Man, Jessica Jones. Oh.
That's right. So good. He's the manipulator.
Oh, man. Such a... What's his name now? Tennant. David Tennant. That's the actor's name. Fantastic performance. Man, yeah, that I would have put that on my list. That's a good one. Annie Wilkes from Misery.
Is that the nurse? Is that the nurse that kills her patients?
I'm not sure.
We don't know, but okay. Next.
Mr. Burns.
From the Simpsons.
Yeah. Gordon Gekko from Wall Street. Khan from the original Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. Roy Batty from Blade Runner. And The Man in Black, the Dark Tower series.
The Dark Tower series. Not the Lord of the Rings.
No, it's a Stephen King.
Ah.
Stephen King.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had to think about it.
You know, there's so much stuff out there that you realize, like, you are so familiar with. That's like pop culture, like you must know. But then you realize, man, there's so much I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Yeah, so it's good to be able to like share the little back and forth with friends and people you meet because you get exposed to all these different experiences mm-hmm. of stories and movies or literature. So
yeah,
thank you, Martin Slam Duncan, for sending in your request and your response.
That's cool.
Keep in contact with the show. We like it. We like hearing from people and getting their feedback. Even when they don't agree with us, we like it just as much because it gives us a little bit of
a broader opinion.
A wider spectrum to see things from. So we enjoy that. So Daph J, this is all you. I don't know what's on the list for today. So you take it away.
Well, see, I'm doing this thing on the iPad.
Okay.
Don't know what's happening.
What are you looking for? How can I help you?
I'm trying to open up the email. How do you do this? Are you sure you want to submit this page? I don't know. Do I? Submit. Okay, so now that I got this taken care of.
You figured out technical difficulties are over.
My goodness. We talked about some current events that have happened.
Okay.
And you did stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you do?
What are you referring to? I did lots of stuff.
Okay, you went to the con, no?
Oh, the Toronto Comic Con
this
weekend. Yes, I did.
How was that?
It was fun. As always, Comic Cons are always fun. I had a really good time. I met up with Martin Slam Duncan while we were there. We were in the same line to meet Bret the Hitman Hart.
No way.
He was at the front of the line with his championship belt. I was a little bit jealous of the championship belt. I recognized him. I went up to say hello. Then they told me that the back of the line starts over here. So I had to go and stand in the line.
How long did you wait in line for?
Not that long. No? I waited in line for him to show, for Bret Hart to show up because he was coming at 12. So in order to not have to miss this opportunity, I waited for about an hour.
Oof.
For him to come.
But now, quickly though.
Yeah.
Was he one of those, like, on time stars? Or was he one of those, I'm gonna take, you know, like, I'm Bret Hart. I'm just gonna show up when I show up. Like, you know what I mean? Because they say don't meet your heroes because you might be disappointed.
Yeah, no, he was early.
Really?
Yeah, he was early.
Wow.
Which was cool. And then it was funny because, like, you could see that the people had been waiting. Because he was only there for the Saturday. For those who don't know Bret the Hitman Hart, he's one of the greatest WWE wrestlers of all time. Legendary in that realm of entertainment, sports entertainment. He was my personal favorite growing up. Huge fan since 1992.
How old were you?
I was eight years old. Yeah, very early. I had... back in 92, there was a very special match against him and his brother-in-law, the British Bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
And I had myself, a couple friends, and my cousins were there with me, who are also rabid wrestling fans. And they were all cheering for the Bulldog, and I was the only guy cheering for the Hitman.
And who won that match?
Bulldog won the match. But it was one of the best matches I had ever seen in my life. Up until this point, it still stands the test of time. And even though he lost, he became my favorite wrestler.
Why was it? Because he was just a good guy? Because you liked his character? Like, what was it about him that you liked? If he wasn't, it seems like, not the popular vote at the time.
Well, he was pretty popular, but I'm not sure what it was exactly at that particular moment that made me root for him as much as I did.
Was it the pink?
Could have been
was
the
it the glasses?
Could have been the pink and black. I don't know. It was just, I think it was just seeing somebody who wasn't as, you know, you had your Hulk Hogan's and your Macho Man's and your Ultimate Warriors who had always had been around. Mm-hmm. He was kind of, he seemed like a newer character. He wasn't new, but it was like a guy on the come up. A guy who was in that, just on the lower card level, just a little bit, because he wasn't as muscular and big as him. So it was almost always like watching David versus Goliath. And you would feel like he would win by skill. Mm. Not by power, by smarts. Mm-hmm. And he would always put the glasses on the kids. So it was, I don't know, it was just one of those things where you were... And in this particular match, it was everybody was expecting the Bulldog to win because it was in England, which is, you know, his hometown.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, yeah, you know he's going to win. I'm like, no, I believe that he's going to do it. So, and it was just an amazing... Now watching it as a person more smart to wrestling in the sense of understanding... How they put together a match.
The technicalities of it?
There is an art to it. It's like a dance. And you gotta work with another guy who understands that in order for the match to be as good as it can be. And so when you watch that and see everything that they did and...
There's an actual art form. It's not just
brute. There is an art form. Yeah.
Fighting. Like,
it was...
Sorry to interrupt you, but I find like... And I say this ignorantly, mm-hmm. but I find UFC to kind of just be like... Just... Kind of like, you know.
It sounds stupid for me to say, but I'm not, I don't like the actual violence, even though when I was a kid I didn't understand that wrestling was as fake as I get now. Not fake, but it was a work.
Right.
But it was something.
It was stage performance.
It was a performance, and those guys did get hurt. Like, it didn't, it wasn't that none of it hurt. It did hurt.
Right.
But.
With the UFC, though, I find that it's a little bit more, like, ruthless. Like, it's kind of like they're just out for themselves, as opposed to with wrestling, I found it was a little bit more like we're against each other for the public, but we're actually working together to make each other look good.
Exactly.
And I mean, I didn't watch a lot of wrestling growing up, but the little that I did watch, that's the vibe I got. Like, these guys were friends behind the scenes. Not all of them.
Not all of them, no.
But there was a... You told me a little bit. There was a bit of a trust, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, if I'm taking you upside down and I'm landing on your head between my thighs...
And you can walk away from that.
Yeah, like, that's... That's like a trust fall.
Yeah, and I think what, looking back now at some of those guys who were of my childhood generation of wrestlers, like someone like Bret Hart, it was hard to tell. Like, he did it so well that it looked real.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
mm-hmm.
make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And no one ever got hurt. But mm-hmm. it was like, wow, that looked like he actually hit him there.
Right.
But there wasn't any... bloodshed or bruises, or at the end they would hug it out type of thing in that match particularly. So it was just one that I remembered, and from that point on I always became a fan of his, and I never stopped. I would, whatever he did, I was always, yes, I agree. Even when he became a jerk, I'm like, yes, I agree. Yeah, hardcore.
So you were like a kid, like, living up to this, like, you were excited.
I've wanted to, you know how they ask, like, five people that you'd want to have dinner with or something like that, mm-hmm. he was on my list.
Hmm.
So
this was the closest you can get to that.
Yeah. So knowing that he... And I'm not the type to go to the cons ever to want to meet a celebrity or actor or pay for an autograph. I'm not into that.
Just because.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'll go to their panel. I'll hear them talk. I'll... bring my microphone with me and record it, but I don't need to spend $120 for Stan Lee to put his signature on my book. I know that sounds stupid for some. They're like, oh, it's Stan Lee, but he, like, I don't know. It just doesn't appeal to me to pay $80 or whatever for a photo
mm-hmm.
from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it was the one time where I kind of broke that rule and said, you know what?
Why, though? What? 'Cause the type of person he is? Because of what he did for the wrestling industry? What was it that made you break that rule?
Just because it's kind of like people whose work has meant a lot to you. So whether it's music, whether it's an author, or artist, whatever it might be, you followed a career of somebody, and you, whatever story they told within that arena of art form, you remembered it. It resonated with you. You cheered for them. They gave you the ups and the downs. So like, there's a lot of good memories of watching him as a child.
Right.
Because these were real life superheroes to me. It wasn't so much that I liked seeing somebody get beat up. It was more like, these are superheroes. There's a good guy, there's a bad guy.
Mm.
And when you see the good guy win, it gives you that feeling like, all right, everything is okay.
Right.
But part of that experience was seeing them get hurt, get cheated, get, you know, there's an injustice, and then they got to fight for that. They come back. So living through that as a kid and growing up and reading the, like, I read his autobiography on our honeymoon, if you remember that.
The book, the black book?
Yeah, the Bret Hart 600-page autobiography. And you kept looking over at me while we were on the beach, like, are you going to read the whole time? Like, this book is so good. So,
see, and I didn't read it, but I saw.
And I would,
I watched his, what was it?
The documentary.
The documentary.
Yeah,
the,
yeah, yeah.
He seems like a genuine person. Like,
yeah.
And he really takes things to heart.
Very much so. Pun intended.
Yeah.
So.
And then what was your experience with him? So you finally got to the line? Did you actually make it in time?
I made it. I was there. I was next in line. I got to pick the photo that I was going to get signed. They went through the line, like, do you want it personalized? I'm like, no. Who gets a photo personalized?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's for kids. I'm getting a signature photo I'm paying for. You don't get that stuff personalized. So then I got to the front. And the guy's like, you know, which package are you going for? Because it got different types of packages.
What did they have?
Well, if you're getting like the belt signed, or, you know, you got a big item that you want signed, whether it's like a figure or his book or something like that, there's a different charge. But then if you buy one of the photos or something like that, then it's another charge.
Okay.
And then you get to take a selfie with him.
Right.
Which was cool. Right?
Selfie.
Selfie. So I picked a photo of him. And then, you know, you get to finally get to the hitman, and
what was it like?
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It was really awesome because
Were you nervous? Were you excited? Did you feel like a kid?
Yeah.
You like, why am I here?
I felt like an 8-year-old again.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. He asked me, you know, what's your name? Who's it to? And I'm like, oh no, you don't got to do that. I'm like, wait a second. Put Eric. I just completely like fanned out. I'm like, my name's Eric. And so he's right to Eric, and then he puts his, you know, the signature, and then so I asked him a question.
What'd you ask him?
I asked, this is the thing, there isn't anything about him that I feel like I don't know.
Okay.
Right? And if you ask me if there was trivia or if when he does interviews, I already know what he's gonna say. Because I've listened to everything, I've read everything, I've watched everything.
So you should have asked him for a sharpshooter.
I wanted
to. Right then and there.
I was this close. What I asked him was, who was his favorite opponent, or which match did he look forward to applying his finishing hold on the most? Like,
oh.
Kind of to see, like, which match was he, throughout the match, anticipating for the ending. Whether it was him going to win a championship for the first time, or if there was a moment where it meant the
most. What match did he have an attachment to, basically?
Right, right,
okay.
Right. Yeah. So, I kind of wanted to know that, because I don't think I ever heard him
say
that. Yeah. So, and he said the Stone Cold Steve Austin match at WrestleMania 13, which is amazing match.
Did you watch it?
I watched it with my cousin.
No way.
We had a recorded tape of it. Our buddy, he recorded it, and then we watched it together after school one day. And it was his favorite wrestler was Stone Cold, mine was Bret Hart. So it was kind of like,
mm-hmm.
We always had the opposite wrestlers.
And you and your cousin?
Yeah.
Oh.
So he liked Mr. Perfect, I liked Bret Hart, and they were kind of rivals.
Uh-huh.
And then he liked Stone Cold, and I liked Bret Hart. So we were always, like, head-to-head in that way. But it was awesome because in those matches, they kind of made each other's careers.
Hmm.
You know, so even if one of our guys lost, the match was done so well that both people looked good in it.
Right, right.
So that match, Stone Cold passes out from the sharpshooter. But it's the match that made him a superstar.
Hmm.
even though he technically lost, it made Bret Hart a bad guy, and Stone Cold became everybody's favorite because he didn't give up.
Right.
So it was, yeah. So to hear him, you know, kind of give a little insight of what was something for special.
What was it like for him to say your name and to look at you in the eye when he said it?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Did it feel personalized?
It like, did. It really
like
did.
Did you feel like it was just you and him in the room? I mean, I know that it sounds... But when you meet your hero, you know what I mean? Like, you idolize a certain... You envision a certain experience. And was it like, did you feel rushed? Did you feel like, you know, like, I gotta go because I'm bothering him? Or did it feel like he was also taking in the moment?
And yeah. Yeah, it did. It did. It was worth it.
Yeah.
It was worth it, yeah. It was a good experience. I'm happy I got a chance to do it. No regrets in that regard. And I felt like, here's a funny story. Not a funny story, but... It sounds crazy, but when he was going to do a panel later on in the day, Q&A. So me and Martin Slam Dunkin' ran into each other during a sketch duel. So I said, next is the Bret Hart panel. When should, you know, are you going to go to it? Are you going to line up? So I said, I'll go line up for us, right? Before anyone even gets. So we were at the front of the line, right? So we waited for that one. Then he went, got a bite to eat, came back. And then we got into the panel, front row seats, like just like square with the hitman. It was awesome. I recorded it. I might post it. But the thing is, he talks really soft now. So, and he didn't talk directly into the mic.
How old is he now?
He's almost, I think he's closing in on 60.
Did it break your heart a little to see your hero like mortalized, is that the word?
Like just see him mortal?
Just to kind of like, well, you know, like...
Yeah, you know what? This sounds really sad to say.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but no, like, I want to know, like...
Yeah, no, I was thinking about that, because you do see them, like, you see that they're aged, and you see that he's accepting, like, he's got white hair now, and all that kind of stuff. But when I spoke to him, it sounded just like him.
Really?
Right? Uh-huh. And it was... So it seems so familiar. And then when he did his panel, he kind of came out and he was kind of walking a little slowly. And everybody was like chanting his name or what have you. But so many of these guys who were wrestlers, professional wrestlers, they died so young and so untimely. And if they didn't die from a heart attack or from some sort of addiction to painkillers... There's some crazy story of how they died. Right. So to see that he's still alive, as sad as that sounds, is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, because he lost his brother in a tragic way. And his brother and the British Bulldogs no longer here. And Mr. Perfect is not here. Like, all his friends, people that were really, really
his
close to him.
His inner circle.
All his inner circle are gone. So for him to be still alive
standing.
And he was my favorite, you know, it meant a lot to be like, yes, I got a chance 20 plus years later to meet him.
Right.
And he was such a nice guy. Mm-hmm. Not just to me, but to, like, there was a kid in line who was like, probably not going to get a chance to see him based on the schedule.
Because he had some
he had a photo op to be at 1:15.
Oh,
so like,
okay.
You know, that's, you're kind of pressed for time. So the kid was like, Brett, can you wait for me, Brett? Just please.
This kid is yelling it across from wherever he's at.
He's not far from him. Like, they're in like, they could see each other, make eye contact. But he looks at the kid and says, "I'm gonna wait for you." He goes, "I'll wait for you. Don't worry."
No way.
It was really like, it meant a lot that this young kid who probably never seen him wrestle live,
right,
was there to see him, and he was like, "I'm waiting."
That
for
chokes
you.
Me up a little bit. I'm a little, look at my eyes. I'm a little glossy.
Yeah. So that was like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So, that's a true hero right there.
Yeah.
Like living up to that. You know
he appreciates,
I mean?
He appreciates the support from the people who have watched him or people who still like him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, so a funny story I was getting to when me and Martin were sitting in the panel, it was the Q&A and all these kids are getting a chance to ask questions, and some funny people are asking
questions.
Eccentric people are asking questions and not knowing when to stop talking. But throughout the whole panel, and this is, it could just be in my head, okay. He kept making eye contact with us. Like, he kept looking square at us. I don't know why.
You think so?
He did. He definitely did. The whole, it was a very strange thing, but there was a constant eye contact. Even when we were at, when he was answering questions, he kept looking directly at us.
You think maybe...
I think he wanted to be my best friend. I think that's what he wanted. He knew. He knew that all these years, this guy's been my fan since forever. He wants to be my best friend.
You're insane.
No, you know what? I don't know. I felt it.
You know what, though?
I'll give you this.
If he made you feel that way to make you feel good and excited, like, I mean, I think that speaks volumes on an individual like that. Someone who makes you feel good for being you and being and feeling good for where you are. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Making your environment feel...
And I had a question, so I kept putting my hand up.
What was going to be your question?
So here's the thing. While he's answering someone's question, and they're like, okay, who's next? Uh-huh. And I put my hand up, he would look directly at me. I swear.
So why didn't he pick you?
Because he's not the one picking. But if he was the one picking, he would have picked me. Because he kept looking directly at me.
They had one of those...
Moderators were picking, and so they were usually picking kids, right? So I'm at the front.
Why do they give kids this preferential treatment?
Because it's because it'll be an experience for them, right? They'll always be able to remember.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, I don't know.
So, again, because I kind of knew all the answers to a lot of the questions people were asking him. Right. And I didn't want to ask him anything, like, sad. Because the one kid stands up and is like, what did you think when everything happened in Montreal? When his whole fiasco with the WWE happened? Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, why would you ask him that? Like, ask him something nice. He's always talked about that scenario. Yeah. But I wanted to ask him, how did he choose the finishing hold that he went with? Mm-hmm. Like, what made him decide on the submission hold? And if he could show us how he does it properly. And I wanted to...
Volunteer.
And I think it would have been a great last question. I think it would have gotten a pop from the audience. And they didn't pick me. But that's okay. That's okay. Next time.
Well.
That would have been amazing, though.
That would have been.
I would have videotaped that sucker. But, yeah. It was good. And then the next day I went to see Mick Foley. Mankind, Dude Love, Cactus Jack.
I liked him growing up. He was fun.
And you know what? His panel was so much fun. He's such a nice guy. He's going around with his daughter. His daughter wants to be a wrestler herself, but they go together. It's so, like, cute.
Really?
Sweet. Yeah. Really, 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 really sweet. So that was... I recorded his as well, but he asked people not to videotape it, mm-hmm. or post it because he doesn't want to get into trouble for anything that he shares in his interviews. Oh, like, just because he wants it to be candid and open, and he goes, you know, if someone puts it online, they might say, hey, on this place you said this. And
right.
So he doesn't want that to happen.
All right, so that's kind of between him and that group of people in the room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I might share it with a couple people that I'm friends with.
Right.
That didn't get a chance to see it.
That's cool.
Yeah. No, he was really cool. There was one girl in there, though, who would not... Like, she was just making a ruckus.
What do you mean?
She was such a hardcore Mick Foley fan that every time the questions were finished answering, she would, like, shout out and cheer and make just a kerfuffle.
Yeah, I think some people need to know when to stop.
It was irritating.
Because you ruin it for other people.
Yeah, a lot of other people were just like...
It's not to say that I'm not a fan either, but, like, you have to compose yourself to consider those around you.
Yeah,
like,
it was a little...
We're all fanning out, but we're just trying to be classy about it.
Even he was kind of like, okay, just relax. Like, I get it. You think you're the biggest fan.
Right.
But, yeah, that's the only thing.
Well, it sounds like you had a good time.
It was a lot of fun. It was, and, you know, I haven't... It's weird because any other comic con that I've gone to, I've never really been too interested in the wrestling legend people that they bring. Mm-hmm. But lately I've been listening to a couple wrestling podcasts talking about, like, the old days of what I grew up watching.
Yeah.
So this all, like, getting to see these guys now was very timely. Mm. It's kind of where my headspace has been.
Right.
Of stuff that I've been enjoying.
You're
listening
on this
to.
Tip right
a little
now.
Bit on a tip, yeah. So... One last thing about the con and about the Hitman was that I got a chance to get a commission from Mike Ruth the artist that I've spoken about
on the podcast. He's a dude with the beard.
He looks like Bret Hart's tag team partner from back in the day. He looks like Jim the Anvil Knight because he's got the big red beard.
Yeah.
So he actually did a commission of
the Hitman. He's the one that likes his wife. He always says nice things about her, right?
Yes, he always says nice things about her. So he did a commission of Bret Hart for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw it.
So that's, obviously. I posted that on Instagram and on Facebook. So that was kind of
cool. It was amazing. Ruth, Mike Ruth, you outdid yourself, my friend. Outdid it. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good time.
Did you know what would have been cool?
What's that?
If you would have shown the commission to...
Next time.
You should.
Next time.
That'd be cool.
I'm going to get him to sign that.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That was eventful for you.
It was. It was a bucket list.
Cool.
It was a bucket list thing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, moving on.
Is that the episode?
No, actually.
That's just the intro.
That was just the intro.
Wow.
It's our world. Everyone else lives in it. So, what I wanted to do was... there was a couple of emails that we have received. Thank you, people, for writing in, having requests.
Love it.
You know, Martin Slam Duncan kind of got things rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have one from, or have had one from, Cousin Adam.
Cousin Adam comes through.
And he had a request. Being a confidant, friend, family member, he kind of knows you a little bit.
Can I just say... Cousin Adam was the recipient of many a sharpshooter growing up.
That's funny.
He let me give him sharpshooters quite frequently.
Oh, yeah.
He never tapped out, though.
So, the Cousin Adam wrote an email in to us, and I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Ready for this?
I'm ready.
Hello, folks. Got an episode request that might hit a little too close to home for you. And again, this is based on the fact that he has grown up with you. Right. He knows you.
Okay.
After your Rocky episode, where you ranked all of the films, I'd like to hear you ranking an explanation of all the Superman films. Then from Christopher Reeve to the new dude that I can't remember his name. And then in brackets, he says Martha. So stupid. I'd like a ranking of your favorite Supermans in order.
Okay.
I'd say even throw in Dean Cain in there. Why not, right? Mm. I'd love to hear your take on this. Dean Cain doesn't get enough love. Also, if you have time, we'll make the time. Don't worry, Cousin Adam, we'll make the time. A quick ranking of the villains from the films. You better include Nuclear Man. ... Horrible. I think we know how he feels about that one. Anyways, we'll love to hear it. So again, your movies in order and why, your Supermen in order, and your villains in order. Strictly movies and TV. Thanks.
Okay. Does that include animated? We'll just go live action. We'll go live action.
Let's do live action. Yeah. But that was Cousin Adam's request.
Okay.
So, the fact that he asked you about the whole Superman thing,
mm-hmm.
it has to obviously be based on the fact that you are a Superman fan.
Right.
Am I correct in assuming this? Obviously. Right?
The Cave of Solitude.
So, before we go into this, I wanted to, I guess, let the fans know, or the listeners know, a little bit of how you kind of delved into the whole Superman realm.
Becoming a fan?
Yeah. So, first off, what's your first memory of Superman?
Okay.
Now, I'm not... I feel like I'm going to get to know you a little bit, too.
Now, just so people listening know this, none of these things that you're about to ask me, I'm prepared for.
No, you know
I don't have... I didn't... Like, whatever I do is going to be right off the cuff right now. Freestyling
it. Yeah.
My earliest memory of Superman and why I like Superman... There is a 3-inch figure from the Superpowers Kenner set that we used to get at gas stations.
Okay.
And that was my first toy that I remember owning as a child.
Superpower Kenner?
Yes.
Set?
That little guy up there.
The one that we got at the last Comic-Con. Last Con,
right. That's my favorite.
They were selling the whole, like, league back, like, when we got that one.
It was fantastic.
We broke the set.
We did.
We were trying to be... I told you to go for it.
You told me to go for all of them.
But one of them was missing a cape.
And that bothers me.
That's why you left it.
You know what? I wanted to get them all like Pokemon. But I wanted to be, you know, a little bit reasonable. More reasonable.
Yeah. And what I was going to spend. You wanted to make your dollar stretch.
Right. I didn't want to be too impulsive. There was but commissions.
There was... Right. Yeah.
But the one thing that I always regretted not doing was getting that toy. Whenever I saw it, I never got it. So that last con, I said, I'm getting that toy this time. If I see it, I'm getting it. That's mm-hmm. going to be on my list. And it was the toy that I played with most frequently from a child. Like, my first memory of Superman is that little toy.
Where did it come from?
My parents gave it to me. Or maybe.
So does that mean that your parents were Superman fan?
I don't know. I just think it was a common toy to get kids. Like, when you pumped in gas, it was like a $4 toy or something like that.
So no one in particular introduced you into Superman?
I had a friend growing up who had the whole collection of the Kenner things. This was, like, I going to this friend's house was equivalent to going to McDonald's or Wonderland. Because it was going to be so much fun.
Was this a rich kid?
I don't know. I don't think so. But he had the Hall of Justice.
Because you know when you have that friend that has like the whole the whole Barbie doll house. Yeah. They have like the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And going to their house is like...
The best.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was the one who really got me into like the whole universe of superheroes. Realizing that there isn't just Superman. But mm-hmm. So I knew there was Batman and Robin and Superman. But then there was... The Flash, and then there was a Green Lantern, and all these other characters who I couldn't even remember their names. He had the Hall of Justice, and it was just like, whoa. He had the Batmobile, all these things. So I just loved the idea of superheroes, and that's also why I liked wrestling, because they were like real-life superheroes. Right. You saw Hulk Hogan with the big, shiny yellow boots, and you know, it was just like, wow, this guy's so strong. He's slamming giants, all that kind of thing. So that toy, that's and then when I saw the movies on television and realized that this guy's real. Like, there's a real Superman.
There's a dude out there flying.
Like, this guy, tight. Yeah. Like this toy, this toy is somebody. It just like blew my mind to know. Like, so it was just the music, the movie, the toy. And then you went to the, sorry, you're going to ask me a question?
Saying that, I want to know what about Superman was the thing that made you think that he was so great? Like, there was so much about him, right? He had a cape, he could fly, he could do all this stuff. But what was it that thing that drew you to him to be like, he is the epitome of a superhero?
Oh, I don't know what it was that made me realize that this is Superman, superhero, this is the definitive superhero. I didn't even know that he was the first one, really.
Right.
It was just, he could fly, he's super strong.
You knew he could fly, or did you assume he could fly because he had a cape?
I figured anyone who had a cape should be able to fly. Even though Batman couldn't fly. But,
he could swing.
He could swing.
It's close to it.
Right. So...
There's not one thing that man can't do.
And then you get that glimpse of him on the screen, and you're like, he can fly, he's got all these special powers. It's just like, there's nothing he can't do. So just when you think that, like, he has the laser beams, he's got, fly at the speed of sound, all these things, mm-hmm. like, he's super strong, he's bulletproof, he's just the guy you want to save you at the end of the day.
Now, was Superman the intro to comics?
Yeah.
Or to the TV? Like, what were you introduced to first? TV or comics of Superman?
I think it was all kind of all at the same time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A mishmash of
both? Yeah, it was kind of just the toy, realizing that there was an actual person playing him on TV who I thought was Superman. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I saw Christopher Reeve in another movie. I'm like, oh, look, Superman's in a movie. Like, that's how I computed in my head.
Okay.
Like, Superman is pretending to be this guy. Because to me, that guy was always Superman. It wasn't Christopher Reeve. And then going to get milk with my dad, I got, you know, to choose a comic book off of the rack, and it was Superman. And for some reason, I realized that this is where the superhero actually exists, in the comic book.
Okay.
I don't know why. I don't know if it was another cousin who collected comic books told me, like, this is the real thing, but I realized the comic books were, like, the Bible of superheroes.
Right.
And, yeah, just, I don't know.
It just took off from there.
It just got addicted to the whole idea of superheroes.
So, I mean, it's quite obvious. I think everyone who's been listening at this point knows that my favorite superhero is Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So, I came to think about this because Batman and Superman are, you know, they're best friends. Mm-hmm. They kind of lean on each other. They make each other better.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking, like, you know, if Superman didn't have his powers, what would he... What is Superman without his powers to you?
Superman.
Still.
Because that's the thing you realize is that, well, when you read the comics, depending on the version you read of him, it's the way that he was raised by his parents that makes him that good. Because he could have used his powers to do anything with them. But when you see the story, you realize that they helped him realize you've got the ability to help people. You have the responsibility to help
people. You have an extraordinary gift.
Because they raised him to be a good person, it motivated him to do good things. He felt like, I have to help. I want to help.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the ability to help, so I should. Which is what always was endearing about Superman. Because there's been times where he's had no powers. And he still will put himself in front of a bullet. Because he feels like...
That ingrained goodness is in him.
Right. He goes, the symbol of hope is what people think of as Superman. So he's... Even if I'm going to get shot, I got to still stand for what people have expected of me.
So he's just a selfless,
yeah,
good person.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is a true hero.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That is, so it's more not, it's not just the power. It's more like he'll die for the cause.
Right.
Just like Batman.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, well, so the question that was posed was the Supermans that have all been made. So there's several of them. Oh, there's the original Superman that was made in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
Then followed by Superman Part 2, done in 1980. Superman 3 in 1983. And then number 4, which was in 1987. That was the Quest for Peace. But it didn't stop there.
You forgot Supergirl.
Well, okay, and this was going to be my question. Does Supergirl count in the whole, like, Superman? I mean, it was revolving around her. And, to be honest with you, I've never seen Supergirl. Only because I've heard how bad it was. So it's kind of like, why am I going to watch it? Kind of like the Fantastic Four that just came out. Like, right. Everyone's like, save your money, save right. your time. Don't torture yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so I was going to ask you, like, is that even one to count in this realm?
It counts because it was in the same continuity as the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, believe it or not. Before there was, like, a Marvel Universe and DC Universe, the people who owned the rights to make Superman movies,
mm-hmm.
they were the Salkind, the father and son, and they made Supergirl exist. And they had a poster of Christopher Reeve in her dorm in college or her private school, wherever she went. And Christopher Reeves was that Supergirl's cousin. And even the Jimmy Olsen made a cameo appearance in that movie.
Okay, so I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, so they tied it in that that Helen Slater was Christopher Reeve's cousin, the actor and actress.
Okay.
So if they would have made a crossover movie, it would have been, that was the people who produced it, the executive producers, they would have had the rights to make that movie.
What year was Supergirl then?
84.
You think?
I think 84, 85. It was right after, just a little after Superman 3.
So, we've established those Supermans.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't stop there, though.
No.
There's a couple more Supermans. On record.
Lois and Clark?
There's Superman Returns. Now, this is just the movies we're talking about specifically at this point. Then there's Superman Returns. And then in 2000, that was in 2006. But also in 2006, they released a Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very interesting because you're basically going to be, you know, I guess, what was requested of you is to put in order what your...
That's tough.
What your preferences are. Now you have the same movie, just a different version of it.
Yeah.
After that, 2013 was The Man of Steel.
Okay. Yep.
And then the other variation of it was the BVS.
Yeah, BVS.
2016.
The follow-up.
So those are your movies. Those are your Superman movies. Now, I'm stupid with this, right? I can only come up with what I could research. Is there anything that I'm missing in the movie realm? Because he specifically asked for your Superman movies.
Was there
another one? Did he feature anywhere? Did he make a cameo anywhere?
No, there was ones that were made in like the black and white era, but I don't know if they ever made it. I don't know if they were considered theatrical releases. It was Superman and the Mole Man, which I've actually never seen because I just think it would be too hard to sit through at this point. Really. And then there's that one, Superman and the Mole Man.
Okay.
But I kind of look at Superman the movie as the
the starting point.
Yeah.
So hit it. What do we
rank the movies?
Well, that's what he asked for. Let's give the people what they want.
Okay. Well, easily Superman the movie is number one.
Easily.
It's to this day, I still rank it as the best superhero movie of all time.
Why is that?
Because it still holds up. As a movie, as a story, they at a time when they could have been really cheesy about it, they made a classic. I don't know how else to put it. They took the content seriously. They didn't make it. They made it silly at the right points. They casted people so well. Gene Hackman, who was, you know, I think at that time nominated or would have won an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Marlon Brando was already Marlon Brando to play Jor-El.
And Christopher Reeve at that time, if I'm not mistaken, he was kind of just picked out of like...
He was a newbie.
For him to be opposite these... how do you say it?
Legends?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean...
That's big shoes to fill.
Yeah, no, it was.
He held his own.
Yeah, no, it was. I think they even got higher billing than him on the movie credits, like who's listed as being in the movie. I think Christopher Reeve was like third.
No.
Yeah, because of those people. So
playing the lead.
Right.
Playing the lead.
So it gave the movie a credibility to have these world-renowned actors in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather, wrote the script. Was one of the script writers for Superman 1 and 2.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he wrote those, one of them, right? The story was based on something he wrote. And Richard Donner, young Richard Donner, and he was like, I don't want to make this campy. I don't want to make this like Batman 66, where we laugh at Superman.
Right.
So they told the story, and it was like very Shakespearean in the beginning, where you're in Krypton, and they set the stage of what Krypton would have been like as far as a culture, which was kind of very cold and... You know,
it looked like a nice world.
Yeah, it looked like a nice world, which was something kind of, I think, new to the mythos of Superman. And then when you see him in Smallville, they do that whole second story of being in Smallville and being raised by the parents. And you kind of get glimpses of the way he was raised and the value that Jonathan put in him. It's very Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see him early on in his life lose his dad, which I'm not a big fan of Superman not having parents currently, but at that time he didn't have parents in the comic books. Both he was all by himself, so it was fitting, but he realized that he couldn't save everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it made him want to, because he lost his dad to a heart attack. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So just that whole story of where he comes from and discovering who he is and...
The origin.
All that origin
the baseline,
story. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
But building the character up. Building it up. And seeing why you care for this person. And it was very Americana, very Norman Rockwell, and all the things that you know, being in the farm and apple pie. It's a feel-good movie. And then when you see Christopher Reeve become Superman... There's that one special scene in the movie that makes you understand why people don't realize like, how is it so hard to see this guy in glasses not be Superman? Like, how stupid are we supposed to be?
But there's when he stands up straight?
He stands up straight.
Right.
And it was that moment there, you really see how, if it's done right, it's believable. And yeah. Christopher Reeve knocked it out of the park, where he had, you know, shoulder slouched. He was a little, his neck was a little lower.
Clumsy.
He had a little clumsy, really sweet.
Insecure,
you know, a little stutter. But, and in a lot of ways, that's who, it was so interesting to see Superman like that. Because.
But was that Superman or Clark Kent?
That's the thing, right? Is he playing the part of being Clark Kent, or is that how he actually feels inside because he's been raised as Clark Kent? So when you see him do that little bit of confidence where he lifts his shoulders and he changes his voice a little bit and then go back down, you're like, of course they wouldn't imagine Clark Kent as Superman. How could anybody believe that this is the guy who can also fly?
Right.
And you know, carry a plane on his back.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. And just to see him use his powers and that one scene where the helicopter falls and Lois is there,
right,
and he takes off, grabs the helicopter, and grabs Lois, and then the helicopter's coming and he just grabs it with one hand. I get emotional. Every time I get emotional. So I
Rocky emotional?
No, more like a little kid emotional. Mm. Like, that's Superman. Not right. Rocky's a whole different.
It's a whole different.
That's relationship emotional. But yeah, that scene always gets me.
So the original Superman.
Number one. Yeah, probably all time. It's the standard. It's the benchmark of all other superhero movies, I think. And it's the one that got the ball rolling to make people realize, like, wow, you can get a guy. And I mean, they didn't try to. All these other superhero movies, they always like, oh, you can't make the suit so bright, or you can't make Batman an actual Batman suit, or the X-Men wear blue and yellow. That looks ridiculous. No, they made Superman. They put the underwear on him. Right?
It was bright. True to
it
the
was
character.
It was Superman.
It was authentic.
Authentic. Yeah. That movie captured it perfectly.
Which I guess that's why it's one of the most revered.
Yeah.
Films, right?
Films.
Even though I guess you can, it can be dated in the sense of like the computers and the costumes, like the dressing, the like you can date that movie.
As you know,
but it holds its own in a way.
Maybe it's in my mind playing tricks on me, and I can't see past it. But that's the movie where I believe he's flying. For some reason, I buy it more in that movie that he's flying. And as opposed to these other ones where there's all these tricks that they could do and CGI and effects.
And the sonic boom.
All of that. Like, I watch him when he takes off and grabs the helicopter. I'm like, he's flying. How did they do that?
Mm.
And then maybe it's just the young kid in me who can't see past it. Because another person will watch it like, man, that effect is so bad now.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Hmm.
It still holds up for me.
So what's left now is Superman 2, 3, 4, Superman Returns, Superman Returns,
oh,
Superman
no.
2 again, but the Richard Donner cut, Man of Steel, BVS.
Okay.
Where are we going to next? What's
okay,
number 2?
Okay, so Superman 2 is next.
Oh, this is so interesting.
Yeah. Superman 2 is next, because it's a direct sequel to the first one,
right.
And the Richard Donner cut, it's not a completely different movie. Because he filmed part one and part two at the same time. He's filming them simultaneously as one movie. And it was just when they were in the Daily Planet, he would film all the Daily Planet scenes at Daily Planet. And then all the Fortress of Solitude scenes from part one and part two were filmed in the same time, right? But it was taking too long. And they were off budget.
Well, yeah, because if he's doing two things at the same time.
He was trying to tell, you know, it was going to be two movies. But
he wanted a consistency.
Yeah, he wanted it to be consistent. And the producers were like, you're taking too long. We're going to stop the funding. They were really a pain in the butt for him in the whole process.
Mm.
So he had almost all of part two finished himself. So a lot of what you see in Super... I don't know if you even remember Superman part two that well. A lot of what you see is his movie. But then they got... Once that he finished part one, they kicked him off. And didn't let him finish part two completely.
No way.
Yeah. So there's scenes that he filmed that weren't included in what became the theatrical version of Superman 2.
But, that sucks.
Right. It does suck.
Is he bitter about that?
He was a bit bitter. Yeah, he was bitter about it because the movie was almost finished. And there's some things in part two, and in his cut, that would have been nice touches and fit nicely with
what he had been done. Well, it only makes sense that the maker of this story
could finish.
Yeah, exactly. They fill in those voids, right? I mean, that it would only make...
Yeah. So they continued with another director who reshot a lot of the scenes that he had already done, almost like scene for scene.
Oh, like salt to the wound.
Yeah, and some of the stuff he did I actually liked a little better.
Compared to the Richard Donner?
Yeah, some of the... Because the Richard Donner cut... So some of the stuff he did with the villains that were in it, General Zod, Ursa, Nan, he did a little bit more showcasing of them because they really liked working with the other director. And so some of the scenes that he did with them was cool. Some of the things that were different, like when you watch the Richard Donner cut, it was actually discovered... The reels of it were discovered by Jeff Johns, the comic book writer and the guy who's...
The guy that wears the hat all the time?
Yeah.
He did the Green Lantern stuff.
Yeah, he did pretty much everybody in DC.
Look at me.
Look at you. So he was Jeff Johns. Jeff Johns was Richard Donner's assistant.
Yes, I remember hearing his podcast.
Yeah, so he worked with Richard Donner. And he
and Richard Donner was really good to him.
Really good to him. I
think when Jeff Johns lost his sister... Yeah. In a plane crash or something.
Yeah.
Like, he gave him all the time. He gave him money. He gave him everything he needed to actually be there for his family. Like, he was a good boss.
He was very good boss.
He never said anything bad about Richard Donner. Like, no. He was a upstanding gentleman.
Yes. He spoke very highly
of him. And gave him a chance.
Yeah. He did. So he's the one who uncovered the reels of his Superman cut. And he was a big part in putting it all back together or getting the ball rolling for them to put that movie back together. So one of the things that was different in the Richard Donner cut that I... And I'm going to put both of them tied. I'm going to put the Richard Donner cut, Superman 2, together. I'm not going to try to separate the two of them.
Okay.
Those will... Just Superman 2. Richard Donner cut and the Richard Lester version. Superman 2 in general.
They have the same name, the directors?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So in his version, what I like better about the Richard Donner cut, what he was going to do when Lois figures out that Clark Kent is Superman, one and the same, she does the stunt where she pulls a gun on Clark and says, "If you're, I'm so sure that you're Superman that I'm willing to shoot you." And she ends up shooting him, and Clark... Obviously, right? Bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "I can't believe you took that chance. What if Clark Kent wasn't Superman?" And so she says, "They were blanks." So he gave himself away.
Mm.
Right? It was really clever.
Mm-hmm.
And in the theatrical version, he trips on a rug, and his glasses fall into a fire, and he grabs his glasses and he.
And
puts
that's it right.
On.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's not quite as effective.
Right.
So
and then she gets surprised that he didn't burn his hand or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. So, there's certain parts of the Richard Donner film that I like better, and there's other parts that I'm not as crazy about. Because the Richard Donner movie, it was supposed to end the way Superman Part 1 ends, where he flies around the world and turns everything backwards.
Right,
Superman 2...
To save Lois.
Yeah, Superman 2 was supposed to end that way, originally. And because he was in a rush to finish Superman 1, he just tacked that on to Part 1.
To give it a conclusion.
Yeah.
Right.
So when you see it in part two, the Richard Donner version, it's a little cheesier. It's a little campy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm happy that they didn't go with that ultimately.
Got it.
So, but a lot of what he did is in part two, Superman 2.
Right.
I like that movie. I like Terrence Stamp as General Zod. Nan was, and Ursa, they were great villains. Three against one. And Lex Luthor, having his hand in
That's
it.
That's right.
It was a good movie.
Yeah.
I liked it.
So one and one, two and two.
Part one, yeah. And one and two, right? Back to back. And then next, I'm going to go with Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So why is that?
I like that it's its updated version. I didn't have a problem with it the way other people did of the, like...
With the dark, and he killed Zod, and you were good with that?
I didn't mind the action, and it becomes a little too much sometimes, a little exhausting, but it's Superman. And you're, again, facing three villains. Mm-hmm. And if Krypton was coming here to people of Krypton with Superman powers are coming here to terraform Earth, that's what would happen.
Your back is kind of against the wall on this one.
Yeah, and he's only been Superman for a day. He's only figured it out, kind of thing. And he doesn't really know how to be great yet. Mm-hmm. And he's faced with a...
He's not yet the character that we know him to be.
No, this is... And to me, if they would have explained it in BVS with, you know, this is the reason why Superman doesn't kill because of what happened with Zod, when I watched it, I'm like, well, that's why he's never going to kill again, because he hated doing it when he felt like his back was against the wall, mm-hmm. and he was inexperienced and didn't know better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could have written it differently. But I liked Krypton.
Krypton was beautiful.
Krypton was awesome in Man of Steel. I liked how they worked the angle with him and Jor-El. Russell Crowe as Jor-El. I liked that.
I was going to ask you now, who was the best Jor-El? This is my question.
Who was the best Jor-El?
Yeah.
Man, you asked me to pick the Godfather or the Gladiator?
Okay, not the best. Let me make it easier for you. But like, what? I'll tell you my opinion. I know Marlon Brando is one of the greats. He's a legend, right? But I'm gonna say the Gladiator. I'm gonna say Russell Crowe only because I actually got to see him act. He wasn't what's it called? The hologram. Like, I actually got to see him do stuff. Now, I know it was out of Marlon Brando's control because he was written up to be this image. But there is more for me to judge based on what I got to see from Russell Crowe's performance.
I liked Russell Crowe as well because he was a fighter. He fought for what he believed in. And
I think that also gives you a taste in, like, although Clark was raised by the Kents, you can see the ingrained, I guess, fighter or warrior or the just person that he is from within. You know what I mean? That's not something that was just taught.
Fights
that
for what he believes
that
in.
That was something that he was born with.
Yeah, I like that. I like that aspect, too. And I like the whole idea that he was naturally born, because Krypton at that point had been using matrixes to have children, which I thought was a cool, like, he was kind of born as a illegally,
right?
For that generation of Krypton. So I like the premise of it. I like that
he was the last son of Krypton.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, the last real naturally born Kryptonian. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I liked that the story was non-linear, kind of like a Batman Begins, doing little flashbacks here and there, seeing him, travel abroad like a nomad and figure out who he was. I liked it.
And Russell Crowe wasn't just in the beginning of the movie.
He was throughout.
He was throughout. A reoccurring... not just character, but like, a force with Clark. You know what I mean? Like, he... Anyway, this is your show.
No, it's our show. But so being a pretty well-read Superman fan, I felt like when I watched Man of Steel, there was enough... I recognized, oh, that's from this guy's story of Superman. Oh, there's something that they pulled from Superman Birthright. Oh, there's something from... the Jeff Johns Superman. There was I caught all these little.
They were pulling from the origin of Superman, not just his original story, but just from the whole comic book realm. Like, they were actually paying homage to where he actually came from.
Yeah, so like more of a modern day take where I'm like, oh, they took a little from here, a little from there. They put it together, and it all works. Right. I felt there are problems I have with it on subsequent watches were the pacing of the story, but that's Zack Snyder's style. Some of the pacing just doesn't make sense.
Right.
When Lois comes into the picture and so some of that stuff I'm not really a fan of.
So some of the storytelling.
Yeah.
But the actual character.
The character, the story, the action, seeing Superman fight for once. Mm-hmm. And not be, like, use his powers to fight a villain, which you never really got to see. He's always, like,
okay.
Carrying things.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was cool. But when you watch Man of Steel, and it's a 2.5-hour movie, and he never ends up working at the Daily Planet. Whereas you watch Superman the movie, you get Krypton, you get Smallville. And you get to see Clark Kent work at the Daily Planet.
Very interesting. That's right.
It's such a wonderfully paced story.
Right.
You get to see Lex Luthor. And all of these characters and villains and motives are all established.
Who are subtly introduced.
It's just done so
well.
But
you don't even realize. Well, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of that is done in such a way where it's not...
Which is why I like Batman Begins.
Right.
Because I think it's also done in such a way that you don't even realize how much is being presented to you. But when in subsequent views, like, wait a minute. It
doesn't feel stuffed
it
in.
It doesn't. No. It doesn't. It's done very naturally. It's very...
Right.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
That just goes... For me, that goes to show how you tell a story.
A good story.
Man of Steel... Superman the movie.
Right.
Is like...
Yeah.
When you compare it with Man of Steel, it's like, wow, it was just as long, but there's so much that's missing.
There's so much more in-depth material. Yeah.
You never see Clark Kent work at the Daily Planet.
That's, you don't want it? Not until the very end.
No.
Until the very end. That's true.
That's essential.
Wow. Okay. But maybe they did that on purpose, you know, knowing that they were going to have, sequels.
I guess, but
or
even
a
in...
sequel.
Yeah,
even but in, that is a pivotal role of him. Like, that's my question sometimes. It's like, is it Superman? Like, who's really... Like, is Superman Clark Kent, or is Clark Kent trying to be... Do you know what I mean? Like, who is he really...
Okay, so...
Because if he's an alien...
Right.
On Earth...
Right.
Well, now is he just really just trying to fit in and just, you know, keep the peace and be one of us kind of thing? Or is he trying to suppress... You know what I mean? You know
There's two schools of thought. Originally, and in the Christopher Reeve version, Superman is who he is.
Superman is who he is.
Superman...
He is Kal-El.
He's Kal-El Superman... And Clark Kent is someone who he now has to pretend to be.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's how the comics back then were written. And he was kind of, you know, he was overpowered. He was more of a loner. And it was always like a will they, won't they with Lois.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was always the gag. It was constant. It was the comics back then, for me, reading them, I'm like, oh, this is, I could see why people hate Superman. If this is what the comics were always like.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the mid-80s, when they relaunched Superman for the first time, that's when the writer, John Byrne, switched it and made Clark Kent the main character, and Superman was something that he could do, which is what I personally prefer as a Superman story, because it gives him... people that he cares for. He's got relationships with his parents. He's got a relationship with Lois. Yes, he still has a secret identity, but Superman is something that he can do, and he's got to kind of learn how to be Superman so that people don't recognize he's Clark, which is kind of my preference to Superman, which is what you see more of in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. They kind of did that version a little bit more, which I know you're an absolute huge fan of. But as far as the comics go, I think it's more interesting when you focus on Clark Kent.
Right. So.
We're on number 4.
One more again. 1 is 1, 2 is 2, and then Man of Steel is number 3. Now you need to move on to your 4th pick.
I'm going to go... Okay, I'm trying not to go nostalgia for what I... When I was a kid, my favorite Superman movie was Superman 3. When I was a kid.
When you were a kid.
When I was a kid. Because it was the one I saw the least of. So when I saw it, it was more of a treat.
Okay.
And there were certain scenes in Superman 3 that were so cool to me. But it's not the next one. I'm going to put Superman Returns next.
Really?
Superman Returns next. It's a love letter to the original. It's a sequel. It's a sequel to Superman Part 2.
But it's such a bad sequel.
It's not. You know what? It's got problems, but
like
it's not.
Like, if Cousin Adam asked me if it mattered at all.
Yeah.
What I was gonna say.
Yeah.
I know it's about you and what you want to say. I wouldn't even have added this to the list.
Superman Returns?
Yeah.
Okay.
It would have been like its own. I would have put Superman Returns in. What's it called? The bad place where they all go?
Oh, the Phantom Zone.
To the Phantom Zone.
Yeah. You know what?
Everything about it was wrong for me. But this is about you and your opinion. So why? Why Superman Returns?
Okay. If you have to... This is... Problem with Superman Returns?
Is everything?
No. Hold on. You haven't seen it in a while. It's not... It's a love letter to the original Superman. You know what the biggest problem with it is? Is that they didn't translate it to a new generation of what Superman had become, right? They kept that. You watch that movie. That's Christopher Reeve, right? That's who he's mimicking, and they're picking up.
Which is a tough act to follow.
And he did good. I give Brandon Routh. He wasn't bad at trying to be that. But it was too. Kevin Spacey's a great Lex Luthor.
Lois Lane.
A pain. Yeah, you know. It looked good.
Cyclops.
Yeah.
And this boy who she, like, I cannot. Hashtag I cannot.
Yeah, you know what? Making me think, rethink my
no,
answer.
No. It's not about me.
I have problems with that movie now, years later.
I remember when you and I went to see it in the theaters, and we went with your parents.
Yeah.
And I remember after the movie, we went to the gas station.
You.
And I was so upset. I was in such a foul mood. And you were like, what are you talking about? It was so good. It was amazing. You were like hyped, and I was offended. I couldn't shake it. What was it about? Like, stick with that and use that. The reason why I'm bringing up this story is because I want you to use that to explain your stance on why this is where it is on the totem pole for you.
So if
don't worry
you,
about me.
If you use it, if that's Superman 3, right? If that followed Superman 2 back in the 80s, it would be an amazing movie. But it's so far removed from that, and
wasn't it considered the Superman 3?
No, it wasn't, because there is a Superman 3 and 4 that Bryan Singer basically said, erase those from your memory.
Those don't exist. This is number 3.
But you don't. I think there's a lot of things that were not included in the movie that are part of bonus features and all of that kind of stuff that add some elements to it that are missing, which I'm not a fan of saying, oh, if you watch the director's cut, it would be better. But it is a well-shot movie.
Right.
It is...
Did you like his costume in it?
No.
With the little S's within the S?
No.
Was it brighter?
You know what? I don't like Stalker Superman. I don't like the Superman that goes to Lois's house and X-ray visions to see what she's doing, how she's living. That bothered me.
So wait a minute. So are we taking this off? Are we?
That's the problem I have with it. Yeah, I'm retracting my statement.
Was it my doing?
I'm sorry. No, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it, and I think it would have been a good Superman 3 if it had come out in 1984 and 1985, but to try to make that the sequel was paying too much homage to Superman the movie.
Okay.
Too much, almost like it was like a really good recreation of it. You know how Force Awakens kind of was with A New Hope?
Right.
But this was too overt, I felt. Because Lex Luthor's again after real estate, right? Trying to there's a lot of cool things about it that I like that they touch back on, like going back to the Fortress of Solitude and, you know, using a corrupted form of kryptonite to build a new Krypton within, you know, with the crystals in the Atlantic Ocean. Like, there was a lot of cool concepts of what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like they explored the Clark Kent character enough.
Okay.
So there's good things about it. I don't want to crap on it completely. There are good things about it, but there's certain things that I feel like...
So is this still number 4 on your list?
It's really hard for me to pick because Superman 3 and 4 are childhood favorites. But I know that they're not good. But...
Why? What makes them so not good?
The Superman 3...
So, I'm sorry. So is 3 and 4 in the same... Would we say that that's a 5 if the Superman Return stays in the number 4?
Man.
Sequence, like...
I'm really conflicted with the last couple.
Okay, take your time. Take your time. Take your time. There's no rush.
Man. Okay, so just based off of the pleasure of watching it, I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
Okay.
So wait, is number 1 still at 1?
No, number 1 is always going to be number 1.
Is number 2 still at
2?
Yeah,
yeah. Man of Steel, yes. Still, those okay. Those are locked.
Okay. I'll lock
those in. Those are locked. So the next couple, I'm going to put 3 and 4 next. Superman 3 and 4.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah, just because of the fun that I have. Even though they're not good, I still laugh at them. I still, certain things that I enjoy.
Okay.
So Superman 3, what's cool about that, not the fact that Richard Pryor is in it, that's the weird part, is that Superman turns bad. And he has
Does
to.
That mean that he was exposed to to kryptonite red?
No. It wasn't. It was a form of kryptonite that there was a missing ingredient, and they put in the secret ingredient was tar. And it made Superman go, it turned him kind of into a bizarro Superman, where he just became real. Became a perv, he became just upset and bitter and just was...
So he still had his powers.
He still had his powers, but he was just a complete jerk. Like, he did things spitefully. Like, he would go to the Olympic Games and blow out the torch just because. Right. Before they lit it. Or he would go to the Leaning Tower of Pisa and straighten it.
Did you know... So it was a kryptonite thing.
It was a kryptonite thing.
I've never seen... I don't think I've seen...
It's
any... Anything beyond 2.
It's meant to be more funny and humorous, mm-hmm. but there are some really cool concepts in it.
See, because isn't kryptonite red
yes.
supposed to make Kryptonians go out of character?
Yes.
Like, out of their behavior
yeah.
and transform? Maybe even physical transformation?
No physical transformation. It just makes them, like... not care and more malevolent. Like,
so he wasn't exposed to that in this story.
It's a version of that, but it's not, you never see red kryptonite.
I see.
So, and what's cool is he goes back to Smallville and Lana Lang is in this one with little Ricky, her son, with Lana Lang was, you know, the high school girlfriend. So him going back to that was kind of cool. Lois Lane isn't in it because Margot Kidder had some problems with the directors of or with the producers of what she was going to get paid. So they write her out of it from the beginning. She goes on a
so
vacation.
So like a Back to the Future McFly situation.
Kind of, yeah. They write her out of. She's in the beginning and she's at the end. That's it. That's all you see of her. So there's a cool scene at the end of the near the end of the movie where Superman's personality splits in two and now the benevolent
Ooh, Clark, splits in two.
Yeah.
Do you know what kryptonite does that? Where a kryptonite can split a Kryptonian into two entities, good and evil. Do you know, Mr. Superman fan?
Gold?
Black.
I was going to say black.
Okay, apparently there's a whole slew of kryptonite yeah.
kryptonite red, blue, gold, black. I think there's even a rainbow.
It's not a rainbow per se. There's green, blue, white. Anti-kryptonite.
Brother.
Which apparently it's harmful to humans, not Kryptonians. There's the X-kryptonite. Do you know what that is?
No.
Supergirl created it accidentally trying to find an antidote to the green kryptonite. Did you know this?
I did not.
So it's harmless to Kryptonians, but it gives animal and humans superhuman abilities. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Okay. Then there's the red and green kryptonite. There's also silver. There's also red and gold. Then there's the Bizarro Red. Did you know this?
I knew there was all these versions.
Schooling you. Then there's orange. There's gold. Then there's the combined red, green, blue, gold.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Okay, there's also Abmagno.
See, that's Superman. That version of Superman from, like, the Bronze Age.
Uh-huh.
Stupid.
Your face. You said that so sternly. Like, yeah. Stupid.
It's too much. He had a super horse and a super monkey and a super this. Like, it was just too much.
It was a little bit.
It was very campy.
It's almost like they were trying to just reach, like they were reaching.
They were running out of ideas.
There, like, was a green, gold, red kryptonite. There was a slow kryptonite. There was the black that we just mentioned. There was an opal, a crimson, a synthetic. There was a Bizarro White. There was an actual fake one.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. If it's fake, then why are we even talking about it? Then there was a blood kryptonite, which apparently was used to resurrect the Superboy or something.
Yeah.
There was a jewel. And then, my favorite, which I was like, what? There was a pink kryptonite. Do you know what that did?
Tell me.
It temporarily turns Kryptonians gay.
Oh.
Yeah. I think for like 24 to 48 hours.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. There was a total of like 20 plus that I ended up finding out. So my question was, like, in this Superman 3 or 4 or whichever one you're talking about, was there a kryptonite reason? It just happened.
What they were trying to do... Okay, so this movie, there isn't a really great villain in it. The only cool villain is Superman fighting himself. That's kind of cool, that he ends up fighting himself.
Does that mean that there was a Bizarro in it?
He kind of turns into a Bizarro version when he gets exposed to this contaminated kryptonite.
With tar in it.
So it's okay. This movie's about, they integrate technology because it uses the use of computers a lot, which is really cheesy, right? Because it was kind of on the rise and more people were starting to get into the whole computer field and as work. So Richard Pryor's character is like a computer whiz, and no one knows how. He just knows computers without ever really figuring it out. He just like, I'm a wizard. I just know how to do this. So he embezzles money from his company, and in order for them to, instead of punishing him, they use him to hijack, you know, satellites to affect the weather and affect all sorts of business propositions that they want to do. And he feels kind of bad because he realizes that, okay, this is now affecting the world, what I'm doing, and it could possibly be killing Superman. So they look up the ingredients to kryptonite because Superman's kind of foiling their plots of what they're doing.
Okay.
So they have spiteful plots. Really dumb. Now I feel like going back to Superman Returns. This is like Batman and Robin era of Superman for the movies.
Right.
So when they just add an ingredient to the kryptonite because there's one missing. So he looks at the pack of cigarettes and there's tar. He's like, well, there's a pack of cigarettes. I'm going to put it in the kryptonite. Richard Pryor's character does. So then he eventually goes Bizarro or bad, just like evil Superman.
Opposite to what he is.
Completely.
Yeah.
But then he has like his conscience is like killing him. So then part of him splits and then the real good Superman comes out, and it's in the version of Clark. So Clark is fighting evil version of Superman. It's a cool scene.
Okay.
They're in like a junkyard, and they're fighting each other. And it's a cool scene.
Who directed this movie?
I think the same guy who did Superman 2, Richard Lester. But they went too comedic. They tried to use too much.
Maybe because Pryor was in it,
yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some cool stuff. Things that I liked watching as a kid.
But it made you laugh as a kid. It kept you entertained?
It kept me entertained, but I didn't, like, laugh out loud. It was still Superman to me. So I loved it because it was a Superman that I didn't see that often. Mm-hmm. So when I watched it, I'm like, this is great. So yeah, it's a tie because it's
so four is number five.
Superman 3 and 4. Can they be tied? Can I put them together?
Of course you can.
Okay.
Of course you can.
Superman 4 is the one I think.
Three and four.
So Superman 4 had a really low budget. You can tell because the effects in it are not good anymore. And it had a really cool concept, but really bad execution and editing. Gene Hackman's back as Lex Luthor, which is good. Christopher Reeve co-wrote it. And the premise is that there's a...
He did.
Oh. And it was a cool concept because it was the threat of nuclear war, right? It was so imminent in the 80s. Like, people actually thought it was going to happen.
Because of the Russians?
Yeah, because of the Russians and the Americans and everybody.
Right.
So that's the threat, is that there's... It's on the brink. So Superman realizes that a kid writes him a letter saying, you know, if Superman, he writes a letter to Clark Kent or to Superman in Superman 4. And he says, you know, could you let Superman know that he could fix all of this if he just gets rid of all of the nuclear warheads and then none of us will be in danger.
Superman with the missile on the cover?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And so Superman realizes...
So that's Quest for Peace.
Quest for Peace.
Okay.
So he feels like... I was always told from the Fortress of Solitude, all the holograms and the historians, like, you're not to interfere with what the humans do. That's not why you're here.
Right.
You can't play God. But he feels like if I don't do something, all of these people will be hurt. So he makes a decision. He goes to the United Nations and he says, I'm going to rid the planet of all nuclear weapons. So he goes on a mission... Quest for Peace, to get rid of all the nuclear weapons and starts throwing them into the sun. Like, we don't need them here. We're just going to kill ourselves. So Lex Luthor says, you know what? I'm going to use this to my advantage. I'm going to plant a little DNA box on one of these missiles. When he throws it into the sun, a clone of Superman is going to come out, but it's going to be one of my creation, how I want him to be.
So Bizarro comes out.
Kind of like a Bizarro, but it's called the Nuclear Man.
Because, again, I didn't see this one either.
No, it's called the Nuclear Man.
Huh.
Who looks, he looks from a kid's perspective. When I watched it, I was terrified because he's from the sun. He's full of fire. But then he has like these silver nails that like grow out, really cheesy. But as a kid, it was captivating.
Mm-hmm.
So those two movies go together. And it's just really bad editing because there's 45 minutes of the movie that they cut out. Because when they screened it for audiences, they were all like, this is bad. And it's long. So they edited it out.
So it was like a Suicide Squad and BBS situation.
Kind of.
Hmm.
And so, It for me as a kid, I watched it a lot as a kid. And it just doesn't make much sense now when I watch it as an adult. But I have a nostalgia.
Do you still watch it as an adult?
Sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never caught you in the act.
You make it sound so dirty. Yeah, sometimes I watch it to just reminisce and laugh. And, you know, you put it on in the background. Yeah, and then maybe Man of Steel. No, Returns after that. Oh, it's so hard.
Why is it so difficult? Is it because Superman? So bad?
No, Superman Returns is a much better film than the two that I just put ahead of it. It's a much better film. It is. If you were to like watch it, script, story, effects, all of that is better. There's no like loopholes. Like, whoa, why does that happen? In those other.
How do you mean there's no loopholes in Superman Returns?
There isn't a plot hole. There isn't a real plot hole. He's been away for 5 years. What we don't know when we watch Superman Returns is that Lex Luthor was the one who plotted that story or planted that story in the newspaper to get rid of him. They didn't show that in the movie. The whole scene where Superman is stopping the bank robbers, where he gets the bullet in the eye,
yeah,
which was amazing.
Yeah, but Lois so happens to remember that Superman is the father of her
child. She doesn't remember. because he gives her the super kiss at the end of Superman
Part 2. Exactly, but she knows that it's him.
She doesn't know
that it's him. In Superman Returns?
She doesn't know that it's him. Yeah. She realizes when the kid has the power, she's like, oh crap, that's his kid.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you remember not having...
It's a super kiss.
Oh my gosh.
I know. That's why there's a problem. That's why there's a problem with it, because they tried to base it off of the 70s and 80s Superman. You shouldn't have done that. And if, again, the Ice Queen.
You were saying?
So, yeah. Can I put those in a bundle? Can I get a bundle spot of Superman, you know?
You gotta talk to Cousin Adam.
Superman Returns 3 and 4, they're there. And then... Last but not least, BVS. That's the heartbreaker of all heartbreakers. Yeah, but
very least.
And you know what? It's probably a better movie than the other ones that I'm putting ahead of it. Like, it is, but it's the one that pisses me off the most.
You said it with such disdain in your face.
Yeah, so much. Because you know what? Superman 3 and 4 came out in the 80s. And
it, so there's no excuse for BVS to be as rotten as it is.
None.
That face. If we could put that face next to this podcast. Like,
you know, from 78, it came out in what, 2016? How many years is that? Almost 30? No, don't more. Almost 40. That's almost 40 years later. They've had a bunch of Batman movies. They had 7 Batman movies. Live action. They had 6 Superman movies. Live action. And then now you get this moment. I don't want to talk about it.
Do you think there's overkill, though? Now that I'm looking at it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, I guess the Donner film doesn't really count. It does, but it doesn't. 5, 6, 7. 7 Superman movies. Do you think it's overkill in Hollywood? I mean, I know it's been done since 78, but do you feel like it's a little overwhelming?
When they're bad, it is. When the movies are bad, it is. When they're good, you can't get enough of it. I don't get tired of good Batman movies. Mm-hmm. I don't get tired of good James Bond movies.
Right.
It's like, oh, another one? The only reason when you go another one is like, man, these movies are bad. But they're making somebody money, so they're going to make it. I don't get tired of Star Wars movies. They can make one every year. I'm going to go watch it if they're good.
Right.
So,
you don't feel that it's overkill.
It's only overkill when they suck. Mm-hmm. Right? When Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out, I was disappointed. And I'm like, okay, enough. Now I worry about the Spider-Man Homecoming because I'm like, they've messed this up a bunch of times now. You know, what do they expect from the people going to watch them?
But for them to redo it, doesn't that indicate that they know that something's gone wrong in the process? And so they're trying to, like, revamp it?
How many times can you do that, though? How many times are you going to revamp it within a 10-year span without completely... Because people are going to be like, which version is this now? Which one is that?
Yeah. And then you have those lay people that will be like, because I had a friend one time say, well, wasn't Joker the one that killed Batman's parents? It's like, no, it really wasn't, though. Like, right. That was just a movie version of it, but it's not what we...
That was one movie version of it.
Exactly. I think it starts confusing the masses.
And that's my biggest beef with BVS, is that this is probably the most watched version of these characters. And now people are going to think, oh, that's what they are. It's like, no, that's not what they are. Yeah. Superman is happy to be Superman. He smiles when he saves people. He doesn't like...
Frown.
He's like, oh, I saved you, but I'm not happy about it. Mm-hmm, like, that's the feeling you get from this movie. He doesn't smile once when he saves a child. And there we go. Force choke.
Next,
we
Cousin ranked Adam wanted to know
best your Supermans.
So there was did a little research. Cousin Adam, I hope you're proud. There is the first man to ever play a live action Superman, which was Kirk Allen from 1948 to 1950. Okay, this is the black and white Superman.
Superman and the Mole Men.
There was the John Hames. No, sorry. After that, there was the George Reeves.
George Reeves.
S at the end. Yeah. 1952 to 1958. He was actually a former boxer. So he kind of brought this edge to Superman on screen. Mm-hmm. And because of that, he was popular amongst the young audience. And however, he reportedly disliked playing Superman in fear of being typecast. So keep that in mind. Yeah. If I have my years in order, the next one would be Christopher Reeve.
No S.
Yep. 1978 to 1987. Obviously, like we said before, he was opposite Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman. He kind of held his own in this whole thing. And when everyone thinks Superman, that's the guy you think of. And then there was this John Haynes Newton, who was Superman from 1988 to 1989.
Superboy.
He played Superboy. Exactly. Look at this fan. Look at that. The premise came after the Superman and Supergirl, I think, situation there. I'm not quite sure.
The producers wanted to maintain the property, so now they made Superboy. I think it was the Salkinds who continued it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Following that, there was a Jared Christopher, which I have to say, when I was doing this research, I'm like, oh my goodness, all these people share the same name. He was Superman from 1989 to 1992. He took over for Haynes Newton in the second season of Superboy. And I think he was there for quite some time. After him, there was the Dean Cain from 1993 to 1997. This was a sexier, apparently, okay, type turn of the Man of Steel. And it seemed to focus less on the hero aspect of that and more on the relationship between Clark and Lois.
Yeah.
And then I think, again,
which is what I like about it,
if my research is up to par, there was now the Tom Welling. The Smallville Superman. So he was a young Clark Kent, not so much Superman, I guess, per se. Yeah. And he actually, you know, continued this character for, I think, the longest run, from 2001 to 2011. Why are you huffing
and puffing? So many, I didn't realize.
And that's why I'm giving you this rundown. Okay, he held this character down for about 10 seasons, and from what I read, he apparently was approached to play this character multiple times, and he turned it down until finally he said, "All right, already, I'll give you what you want." After that, there was the Brandon Routh, who, you know, had the daunting task of carrying on the legacy.
Yeah, he had big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Playing, poor basically guy. Picking up from Christopher Reeve. So he didn't really get the chance, I guess, in my words, to really kind of make Superman his own. Yeah. He basically had to... He was the man playing Reeve, playing Superman.
Yeah.
Basically, right? He didn't really get that chance. And then, from 2013 to our present day, we have Henry Cavill, who I first saw on screen in The Count of Monte Cristo.
Crystal.
Yes, that guy.
Crisco is the...
He was the son of Dantes.
Yeah.
A young Dantes' son.
Spoilers.
You got a total of 9. Unless, of course, I'm missing a few, but I think I did a pretty darn good job there.
You did a pretty good job, Daft J.
So, you got a couple here now.
Okay, well, number one's easy. You're going to go Christopher Reeve, just because of Superman the movie, and Superman 2. Best Superman. Like, he was, you think of Superman, and that comes to your mind. And so much so when there was one artist that wrote, or that drew Superman with Jeff Johns, and he rendered it the way Christopher Reeve looked, and it was, I don't know, it just brought this joy out of reading it. Have you ever seen, I should show you later, Superman Secret Origins. It's like it's Christopher Reeve. It's like, yeah.
I think I've
seen it. Yeah.
I've seen Christopher Reeve in ink form.
Yeah, no, he's number one.
He's the most beloved.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when I was doing this research, he was, like, number one on all the lists. Like, there's no...
No question.
Yeah.
I didn't like... Watching now, seeing him in Superman 3 and 4, he's a bit of a wimp. Like, the way he looked as Superman later in the later years, he just looked too scrawny. He didn't... he just didn't look strong enough. Whereas in Superman 1... He had the perfect build.
The stature?
He had the stature, the build, the posture, the confidence, the movement. I don't know what it was, but as the movies wore on, he kind of just looked too scrawny. And
so does that mean that the George Reeves with an S?
I can't comment on George Reeves because I never really watched that.
You weren't even alive.
I wasn't alive, and when they did replays of it, it was in black and white. I never knew when it was on, so I didn't grow up on
that. Was he in black and white? I thought he was in color.
They put it into color, but it started off black and white.
Hmm.
So if I'm going to pick a superhero of that era, it's always going to be Batman, the Adam West version of Batman. Right. That's what I would have preferred watching as opposed to Superman of that era.
Okay.
So I can't really comment on George Reeves.
Hmm. Can you comment on any of these other than Christopher Reeve?
Yeah, Dean Cain. I watched all of that. Loved Lois and Clark: New Adventures of Superman. Sunday night, 8 o'clock, ABC.
Really? You don't say.
Got all four seasons. You refused to watch it with me. I liked. I didn't.
Is it four seasons only?
Yeah, yeah, four seasons.
Really?
Yeah.
Four it seasons. Seems so much longer than that.
100 episodes.
So why with the Dean Cain? I know you kind of slipped a little thing when I was trying to do my little. You know, breakdown.
Okay. Didn't play a great Superman.
Obviously.
Great Clark Kent. Possibly the best Clark Kent, in my opinion. Because he didn't play Clark Kent like a loser. He played him like that's who he was. The only time he had to throw somebody... Oh, that ice. The only time he had to throw somebody off was, sometimes he had to pretend like he couldn't do certain things around Lois just to throw her off. But he was a stand-up guy. And I liked that. He was a guy who could get the girl, this version of Clark Kent. And that's the Clark Kent I grew up reading in the comics.
So he's number two.
Yeah. As far as Clark Kents go.
Yes. Well, Superman's.
I would put Henry Cavill as a better Superman
than Dean Cain. Okay, whoa. Let's backtrack.
Okay,
Cousin Adam.
Okay,
Cousin Adam must be like, what does he want? Does he want two, four, and three in the same? Like, let's make it clear for him.
Okay.
So for the Supermans, we said Christopher Reeve number one.
Christopher Reeve's the best.
All time.
Best Clark Kent. Hands down. Best Clark Kent, best Superman. Give it to him. He's the guy. And then the next best Superman for me would have been Henry Cavill.
He's number two.
I like Man of Steel, but his version of in BVS was...
His films have been criticized, but I think a lot of people have kind of tipped their hat to him as the Superman today.
Yeah, he's got the look, he's got...
He just needs to straighten those lower incisors and he's good to go. I mean, it doesn't have to be perfect, but he's like those lower incisors, yeah.
Didn't watch too much of the Superboys
to
really be able to give an opinion of which one I liked better.
Mm-hmm.
It was on, I was young, didn't know when, so I don't really have an opinion on those guys. And then Dean Cain would be the next Clark Kent. He's number two Clark Kent, number three Superman.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Oh, I feel bad for Brendan Routh.
Is it Ruth or Routh?
Routh.
Okay. All I know about the Brendan Routh is that he was in a Christina Aguilera video. What Girls Want. That's all I know.
This is hard.
Did you not think about this? Did you not come prepared?
I didn't come prepared. I told you I didn't come prepared. I told you. I didn't know you. You said I got this ready to go. I did research. I'm going to just throw them at you. I told you nothing was ready. It's hard, though. It's hard.
It is. It is. And especially when there's such a plethora of people. Plethora. You like how my fancy words plethora. Are coming out, right?
Yeah, no, it's hard. It's hard. Because I don't hate Superman Returns as much as I've panned it right here.
Okay, do you like Brandon Routh? The look of him or the way he portrayed Superman? Like, what it, like...
See, the problem when I watch Brandon Routh, I feel like I'm watching Superboy. The way he looked. He looked young in the Superman suit. He didn't look like Superman.
Hmm. Interesting.
That was... But I saw all the things he was trying to do to be like Christopher Reeves. Christopher Reeve. Sorry. But it doesn't, like... I feel like he didn't get a proper shot, like you said. I thought he probably could have been a great Superman if they would have just let him be new Superman. Yeah. Not... Can you be Superman like Christopher Reeves was Superman? Mm-hmm. Christopher Reeves, sorry. So it comes back to nostalgia for me. It all comes back to nostalgia. And Tom Welling was actually... He should have been Superman in Superman Returns, Man of Steel. He was perfect.
So they should have taken the CW...
Yeah.
And put it on the big film. The big screen.
He's perfect as Superman.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
But he's never really portrayed as Superman in Smallville. He's portrayed as young Clark Kent.
Only the last scene of Superman. The last scene of Smallville.
I never saw the last scene of Smallville. After, I'll tell you something. I was one of the first that I know of.
Yeah.
Because not many of my friends were in the whole, like, superhero whatever. I watched Smallville by myself. For a good while. And then I forget what season it was. And the Lana Lane in that Smallville, it drove me a little bit insane, but whatever. After a while, it was getting too supernatural for me. In my taste,
yeah.
I kind of fell off the bandwagon. So I can't really give an opinion on the ending of it because I don't know what happened.
As big of a Superman fan I was,
that I do know. I feel like it was more Clark Kent in Smallville in Kansas than it was Superman per se.
Yeah. I love Tom Welling as that character. And I thought he'd make a great Superman, but I did not watch that show.
And they say that the Lex Luthor in Smallville was one of the best.
Yeah, that's all fine and dandy, but that show, I didn't like it.
Because?
It's kind of like watching Gotham.
Hmm.
It's the snobby comic book fan in me where I can't get past... No, he's not supposed to meet this person now because... The whole point of when they meet means something more. You know, don't make him meet Lois Lane in season whatever it was. I know that she's in Smallville. You can't do that.
Yeah.
It's the first time they meet has to mean something huge.
Yeah.
And it can't just be a relationship that he has as Clark Kent. You can't, he's in the whole show with no glasses and he's full grown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now he's best friends or frenemies with Lex Luthor, and you know what their relationship's going to eventually be. He doesn't recognize, like, all these things that are in
but
the mythos.
But maybe that wasn't supposed to be associated to...
But you know where it's going, because they throw Justice League in there.
I'm
they
playing
throw,
devil's advocate
yeah,
here, right?
So like, those were the things where I couldn't get past it when I watched it.
Right.
So it
deterred you from investing in that show.
And I know a lot of people liked it, and a lot of people said it was a great show, and I'm hope that it made them pick up a Superman comic.
Mm.
But I don't think it did. Because what bothers me is when people come to me with Superman facts based on Smallville. That drives me nuts. Because it's just a television show.
Right, right. It's a momentary...
Yeah, and it lasted a long time.
Right. Well, it did. 10 seasons.
He should have been casted as Superman. I thought it would have been a great transition. He's got the blue eyes. He's got the perfect look. There's been some fan art of Tom Welling in a Superman suit, and it's just like, yeah, perfect.
Hmm.
But.
And?
Where do I put him?
Yeah. So Christopher Reeve was one.
Christopher Reeve was one.
Henry Cavill was two.
For Superman. He would be... For Superman... I see him as Clark Kent. I don't see him as Superman.
That's true. I agree.
So he would be in... I would put him after Dean Cain.
So number two after Dean Cain is number one is Clark Kent. Wow, this is very, like...
Christopher Reeve's number one, Clark Kent.
All the time.
All the time.
Right.
Has to be. When that moment where he's like, Lois, there's something I have to tell you. And then, well, I was thinking that that moment, that's greatest.
The
greatest
Brandon Routh? Routh?
He's...
Number three?
Number two. For what? Superman?
I don't know, man. I don't know what you're doing here.
Okay. Number one, Superman.
Let's do it like this. Cousin Adam specifically asked for Supermans.
Okay. Christopher Reeve, Henry Cavill. Brandon Routh, Dean Cain, Superman. Best Clark Kents are Christopher Reeve, Dean Cain, Tom Welling, Brandon Routh.
That was quick.
I had to separate the aliases.
I understand your dilemma.
Yeah.
You can't have one without the other, but at the same time,
yeah.
For you to be able to, like, they are playing two different entities.
And the reason why I put Dean Cain at the bottom of the Supermans is not because I don't think he looked like Superman.
He didn't play Superman.
He did, but it was very limited, and it was always like he would show up in a scene and he would cross his arms.
Yeah, that's so annoying.
Right? He would do that all the time, and, right. And based on the budget and the era that it was in, he couldn't really fight, and he couldn't really use his powers to that, you know, to be good at it. Do you get what I mean? So that's why he has to go at the bottom, but I like Dean Cain.
And finally.
Villains?
He wanted to know what your villains in order were. Now, this is tough because, well, he did say strictly movies and TV. Okay. So that kind of narrows it down. You don't have to worry about comic books or anything like that.
So Gene Hackman, Lex Luthor.
Uh-huh.
Terrence Stamp, General Zod.
Right.
Michael Shannon, General Zod is third.
So the one in the Henry Cavill General Zod?
Yeah, he's number three. Yeah. I thought he did really good.
Yeah,
but,
he's pretty great.
But General Zod, Terrence Stamp General Zod, he might take that number one spot for me. Just for the lines.
Like?
You will bow down before me, Jor-El. Both you, and then one day, your ass! And then... Come to me, son of Jor-El. Kneel before Zod. So good. That's a great villain.
You're glistening right now.
I want to watch him. So good. You got to put Gene Hackman from the first Superman.
Gene Hackman with the wig or without the wig? That's my question. That's my inquiry.
You only see him without the wig. Twice,
mm-hmm.
I think so. Either or, just
but you
Gene
even
Hackman,
see him
Lex
without
Luther.
The wig in Superman Returns, don't you?
But it's Kevin Spacey,
obviously, with the wig or without.
Without.
Always without.
Not always. Gene Hackman wore different wigs, which was cool.
Mm.
So that I like that about him. He always had a different wig on. So Gene Hackman, Terrence Stamp, Michael Shannon, Kevin Spacey. And then Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck?
Yeah, wasn't he a villain in BVS trying to kill Superman? Oh, no, it was the Riddler. I mean, social media Facebook kid. He's not
Eisenhower?
Even on the...
not Eisenhower. What am I talking about?
He's not even on the list.
Snotnose there.
Yeah, he's not on the list. He's horrible.
Ugh. He's awful.
Horrible. Oh, you know who else I put?
The Riddler. You're funny.
So after Michael Shannon, it would be Richard Pryor and then Nuclear Man. But Richard Pryor becomes a good guy at the end, so it's all good.
He had regrets?
Yeah, he redeemed himself.
Mm.
Ross Webster was the actual villain. That's my list. I love Nuclear Man as a kid, but they didn't use
I'm sorry, whoa. Who's Nuclear Man?
Nuclear Man. He's the guy with the sun on his thing, and he had, like... I'll show you.
Do I know him?
He's not a comic book villain. He's only in the movies.
Which movie?
Superman 4, Quest for Peace.
Obviously, I haven't seen it. So who's Nuclear Man? What does he do?
He's from the sun. He's a clone of Superman. because they used a strand of Superman's hair to make, like, the Superman version, but they threw him into the sun, so he's got all sun-based power, so he's got, like, he has these nails that, like...
Oh, the silver nails that you
silver
said?
Silver nails, yeah. Grow longer.
Okay.
He's,
So did Christopher Reeve play another role?
No, it was another guy in the role, but they didn't use his voice. They dubbed Gene Hackman's voice over this guy's voice, just to make it sound like he was... Because it was a mix of Superman's DNA and Lex Luthor's DNA, something weird like that.
That's very weird.
Yeah.
And yet, that is number four on your list.
No.
Of your Superman movies. Yes.
Okay.
Three and four.
All right, all right, all right. Listen.
Are we changing it again?
Listen, this is what we're doing. Superman the movie is number one. Superman 2 is number two. Man of Steel is number three. Superman Returns is number four. Superman 3 and 4 are tied. And then BVS, because it broke my heart. At the bottom. Even though there's some cool stuff in there. Broke my heart.
Are you...
Tired. Spent an hour and a half talking about this. This is like road trip talk.
You took a beating.
Oh, it's a lot.
BVS, dead last.
Yeah. I know that it's better than Superman 4, but... And 3, but it's...
Well, because it hasn't asked for your opinion, and your opinion only, so that's all that matters.
Martha. Save Martha. Yeah.
Eric Anthony, we all like to thank you for showing up today with this...
Thanks, Staff J, know,
this,
for your...
This
your...
unexpected, you know, it put you on the spot, it made you reminisce on your childhood, it brought you back to...
I hope it was entertaining for... Almost 2 hours. Jeez.
Listen, don't worry about that. Ow. You just go with the flow. Ride the wave. Everyone's riding the wave with you.
Ride the wave.
It's all good. So, you know, this is good, though, because we all kind of got to go into the mind of Eric Anthony and break down why certain things are...
You don't gotta...
What? I mean, this is a cool way of getting to know the co-host of this show. So
we talked about Bret Hart and Superman.
Man.
And I got to meet one.
There you go.
Booyah.
Guys, we want to thank you all for coming out and listening to our show. We have fun.
Keep sending us feedback and suggestions of what you want us to talk about on these episodes.
Yeah, it gives us a drive. It gives us something to do. Something
makes us think about stuff we never...
It makes me hit the books. It makes me...
Makes Daph J read. She was hitting me with kryptonite facts that I'm just like...
I'm telling you.
Jeez.
I'm telling you. So until next time, same cave channel... Same cave time.
Sounds good.
Right?
Right. Is that it? Is it a wrap? Put a bow on it.
Yeah, let's put a bow on it.
Thank you guys for listening. Email us. Terrence Stamp. Send us an email at caveofsolitude@outlook.com and we will be back soon.
Ciao, y'all.
I like when you say keep fit and have fun.